The divisional round of the NFL playoffs take place this weekend. Big matchups between the Titans and the Bengals, the Chiefs and the Bills. And those games will go down in history, remembered for that one big play and the final score. But there's so much that gets left behind in the history books of sports. And one of those forgotten names is Kenny Washington. Washington was a running back who became the first African-American football player to sign a contract in the Pro League. This was in 1946, a year before Jackie Robinson started at first base for the Dodgers and broke baseball's color barrier. But as writer Joshua Newman points out, Washington's legacy is hardly remembered. He wrote a story for Slate titled, "Why Isn't Kenny Washington an American Icon?" The forgotten story of the man who broke the NFL's color barrier before Jackie Robinson got to the MLB. And Joshua Newman joins us live now on Culture Shift. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
I love this opening line of the story you wrote. You wrote, "If you were able to go back in time and tell sports fans of the late 1930s and early 1940s that a young black athlete would become an American icon for breaking a color barrier, they'd likely think you were talking about Kenny Washington. Few would imagine you were describing Jackie Robinson. But today, that legacy is very much overshadowed by Robinson. So let's set the scene. Who was Kenny Washington to those fans decades ago?"
Well, the time of that was written, Kenny was finishing up as a player at UCLA, a student, an athlete playing football and baseball. He was a punishing open field runner with a deadly stiff arm and also the greatest long distance passer of his age. He won the Douglas Fairbanks Trophy as the nation's best college athlete, the college football player in 1939. And his team came within a few yards of going to the Rose Bowl. On that very team was Jackie Robinson, who was a little bit younger than him, who also played baseball and football at UCLA and who, by every indication, was his inferior in both sports. When Washington left UCLA, Robinson led the Bruins to a 1-9 record, and on the baseball field, their contributions were even more glaring. Washington was also an outsized personality. He was a bon vivant, a big man on campus at UCLA, and a popular figure from a family of overachievers. His father was a boxer and a Negro League baseball player, as well as an actor. He acted alongside John Wayne in the movies, and his uncle was the first Black Lieutenant Watch Commander in the LAPD. His aunt and uncle, Rocky and Hazel, were the ones that raised him. Hazel herself was the first Black licensed hairdresser by the movie studios. So he was an incredible athlete, an incredible guy from an incredible family.
Your article really does follow these two divergent paths of Washington and Robinson, who you point out they went to school together, they played sports together, they actually grew up 6 miles apart, as you point out in your story. But they had very different lives and reputations about how they carried themselves and really their opinions on things. What were some of the differences between these two athletes?
On the surface, you know, first, there were some similarities on the surface. Grew up not so far from each other, as you mentioned. Robinson in Pasadena, Washington, in Lincoln Heights. Both didn't, their fathers weren't really in their lives. Even Kenny's father drifted in and out of his life. Robinson's father had left the family when they had still lived in Georgia. Politically, hard, you know, I mean, they definitely had different political temperaments, but for most of their lives, both of them were registered independents who largely voted Republican, actually. Which was a bit odd. It's possible this sort of like GOP emphasis on merit and competition had something to do with it. But they were also very, despite these kind of maybe obvious similarities, there were many different things that divided them. It came down, I think, a lot to their influences. As I mentioned, Kenny was raised by his uncle and aunt. His uncle, Rocky, was on the LAPD and believed in a kind of gradualism that Blacks would gradually improve their lot and that they needed to have patience and prove themselves in society in order to attain more equality. Jackie's influence formatively was probably Reverend Downs, the Scott United Methodist Church, had a much more militant attitude towards social change, even though they probably were pretty similar on the political spectrum. Their neighborhoods were real, you know, even though 6 miles apart, you know, that seems like not a big deal, but, Jackie struggled. The racial attitudes of his Pasadena neighborhood, I mean, Jackie had a cross burnt on his lawn at one point, and Kenny was being taken to early morning mass by this friendly Italian neighbor. And obviously their attitudes towards the police were going to be very different. Kenny would actually go on to become a cop if we fast forward the story, which probably don't want to do. Meanwhile, Jackie is being harassed and threatened by police all the way up to the point that he goes to UCLA in September of 39. On the field, incredible talents in their own rights, but just for the sort of modern listener, I mean, if we're thinking about this week's NFL playoffs, think of like the difference between, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. You know, Kenny was the field general. He had the big arm, violent runner. The greatest long distance throwing threat of his era. Jackie, probably the better athlete, faster, quicker, smaller. So those are some of their differences.
When we do bring it back to the field for Kenny Washington, out of college, lots of knee injuries, stints in smaller football leagues. We have to remember this wasn't completely integrated as a league itself. There was all these different operations that were happening. But let's fast forward it a bit to 1946, when Kenny Washington has this reputation. They remember him playing college football. People believe that he was going to be a star. Knee injuries, him being a policeman for a time, kind of changes his trajectory in life. But by 1946, we actually do get to see Kenny Washington in the NFL. I mean, can we talk about that moment and what was going on in his career and why his contribution and what he ended up doing was so significant?
Sure. I mean, just some backstory. 1945, the LA Rams were playing in Cleveland. They were the Cleveland Rams. And they were coming off a world championship season in which they lost money. And the owner of the Rams had sort of since the early 30s, he had his sights set on, he had attended a USC game in the Coliseum, and just the cavernous Coliseum with its, you know, sort of perpetual good weather and 100,000 seats had really drawn him in. And he got approval to move his team to Los Angeles prior to the 1946 season. And a group of Black journalists put Kenny at the center of their campaign to integrate or reintegrate the NFL. You mentioned in the introduction, you called him important to note, he wasn't the first Black player in the National Football League. There was a period from 1920 to 1933 with sporadic, you know, people like Fritz Pollard and Duke Slater played in the league. In 1933, there was this sort of unofficial ban of Black players, a gentleman's agreement, it was sort of understood to be. That the league owners enforced. And then from 33 till 46, till these Black journalists in Los Angeles put Kenny at the heart of their campaign, there were no Black players at the heart of the league. During that time, that was probably during Kenny's prime. Kenny's prime, he was probably, you know, his late in college to the mid-40s. Over that period, yes, lots of knee injuries, lots of knee surgeries. He arrives in 1946 and does incredibly well for a man who is, you know, he's 27 years old. I mean, that's sort of interesting. A year later, when Jackie gets to Major League Baseball, he's 27, but these are different sports. 27, you know, that's sort of around the time football fans know you start worrying about your favorite players, that they're going to start their kind of inevitable descent. Whereas Major League Baseball, that 27 is sort of that magical year where you feel like everything's going to finally click and a player is going to peak. And that did happen for Jackie. But Kenny did well. He had to learn a new position when he got to the pros. He was put at halfback at the pros, and he learned the T formation, which was a new system. And he was wearing this clunky steel brace on his knee after his five surgeries. And yeah, just like Jackie, as you might have heard, he was taking all kinds of abuse, except his abuse was in a sport where there is physical contact on every play. And the line between appropriate behavior and undue violence is sometimes a little gray.
What was the response from, you know, within the zeitgeist of people who are watching the sport and also the journalists at the time of Kenny Washington being on the field and integrating the sport?
It's interesting. I mean, the first thing to remember is that just pro football is such a smaller sport than Major League Baseball at this time. It is a fringe sport. So any kind, regardless of what the response was going to be, it was going to be more muffled than the response that Jackie would have and the ripples that Jackie would create in the larger culture. The press, however, loved him. I mean, Kenny was both a fan favorite and a favorite of the press, both the Black press and the white press. The white press had, you know, always, you know, had sort of broke the rules in a weird way. I mean, he was celebrated going back to his UCLA days as General Washington, you know, sort of alluding to both his role as a field general and George Washington, the first, you know, president of our country, the founding father. He was referred to as our Kenny. It was always our Kenny Washington. It was as if to emphasize that he was a child of Los Angeles. Very loved in Los Angeles. And in the Black press, he was you know, expectantly celebrated for his groundbreaking role. Parties were thrown in his honor. He became a real cult figure and for many years, and was, despite the fact that we may not remember him if we open up the books of pro football history, I mean, he was recognized in the world of politics. Politicians going through LA who wanted to court the Black vote would court Kenny Washington. In the world of entertainment, you know, he started on the side. He played in a bunch of movies. And fascinatingly, in these movies, he gets kind of, there are these wink, wink jokes to the audience that sort of alluding to things that they would know about Kenny on the field. For instance, like in Rope of Sand, which is a film that he did as Burt Lancaster's sidekick, he injures his knee. He injures his knee again in a film called Easy Living, playing someone who isn't ostensibly himself, in a film called Rogue's Regiment with 1948, which is kind of essentially a ripoff, attempted to be a ripoff of Casablanca. He plays a soldier who has this huge arm. He can throw this grenade all the way up a mountain. I could talk about this stuff all day. It didn't, that stuff didn't actually get into the story, but you can check out his credits on IMDb. It's fascinating how he's remembered in the entertainment world, in the political world, in civic life of day-to-day Los Angeles. But in the football world, well, not so much.
There's a very stark difference of how the respective leagues remember these players today. In the MLB, we have Jackie Robinson Day, April 15th, where every player is wearing his number, 42. There's a lot of fanfare around it. With the NFL, Kenny Washington really ends up being a footnote. He's not celebrated in that same way. There is not Kenny Washington Day. I would imagine most even diehard NFL fans do not know his name or his legacy. Why that difference between these two leagues and how they approach these two players?
Well, you know, I was listening to your station leading up to this. You had a segment about Anne Frank. I mean, the same thing could be said for, you know, why do we remember Anne Frank and not any of the other 1.5 million Jewish children who perished during the Holocaust? Sure, it has a lot to do with her diary. It has to do with, you know, her father advocating in her behalf. But ultimately, you know, she says, you know, that she still believes that people are good. There's something about her story that that helps us sustain the narratives we have about ourselves in today's day and age. I mentioned that that baseball was much bigger than football, but also there was no white savior in the Jackie story, in the Kenny story. You know, in the Jackie Robinson story, you have Branch Rickey, who is sort of like the white ally who advocates on behalf of Jackie. And there's no real character like that in the Kenny Washington story. There's a group of Black journalists who firmly lodge this story in Blackness. So it doesn't really make you feel so good about yourself if you're you know, a white liberal trying to like sort of like feel good about celebrating this man's life. I mean, and as a result, Kenny, because of the complexity of the story, the sadness of the story, that he didn't get to play in the NFL during his prime, that he was a shadow of himself when he got to compete at the highest level. You know, we have tended as a culture, or as a say sports culture, to lump him in with the quote unquote four forgotten integrators of the NFL. You'll hear very rarely about Kenny Washington, but you'll hear about the Forgotten Four. There was even an HBO film in 2014 called The Forgotten Four about Kenny, Woody Strode, who joined him on the Rams 2 months later. He was Kenny's buddy who the Rams signed so that Kenny would have someone to room with on the road. As well as Marion Motley and Bill Willis, Hall of Famers who played in the All-America Football Conference in 1946, a league that didn't have a color barrier. Even this past fall, there was another book called The Forgotten First. And I was very excited when I saw the title, but then I realized it was about, the first four to reintegrate pro football. So yeah, I mean, that's the way the NFL has kind of, or that's the way pro football has told the story. Thankfully, it may be changing a little bit. Last Super Bowl, CBS broadcast this short segment. Many of you may have seen. It got a lot of traction. Viola Davis narrated this Kenny's story. It was really Kenny's story for the first time. His singular achievement, trying to set the record straight. However, the segment also referred to him as as having a Jackie Robinson moment. Once again, a year before Jackie Robinson's moment. I guess if we were telling the story precisely, we would be calling Jackie Robinson's moment another Kenny Washington moment.
Yeah, you write in your article, it's unfair to the memory of Kenny Washington to frame his desegregation of the NFL as a Jackie Robinson moment, when if anything, it's the other way around. And Joshua, you point out the idea that the Washington narrative, not so digestible, not so easy to frame. But you ended up approaching this story and framing it very well. I'm curious why you wanted to tell it and what you hope happens down the line for future generations remembering Kenny Washington's legacy.
I came upon the story, honestly, through his icon in the movies, just these incredible references to a knowing audience from the 1940s who were familiar with the intricacies of his career, clearly, or perceived to be. Even in 1959, Kenny goes on You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx, and Groucho alludes to his, not just his throwing arm, but his nickname in a joke. He alludes to Kenny's being compared to George Washington back in the 1940s. So what I hope to achieve, I mean, this guy's got to get, he's not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You've got, it's arguably the two biggest moments in NFL history are the moments when the National Football League becomes national and, you know, extends itself to the West Coast. That's the moment. Before that, there are no teams east. There's no teams west of the Mississippi before the Rams, you know, land in Los Angeles. So, and then that's one. And the other is when the demographics of the league are expanded to include the blacks who were up to that point prevented from entering. So in one fell swoop, Kenny Washington's signing potentially, I mean, you could argue, I do, that the two biggest moments in NFL history happen in that, in come together in that one moment. He's got to be in the Hall of Fame, and I think there are things to other things to take from his example as well. I mean, I think people should be learning about who he was. Look, I understand that he may not be. I mean, Jackie has been firmly institutionalized. He's an industry at this point, but Kenny really warrants a lot of that fanfare as well.
That's Joshua Newman. He wrote the story, Why Isn't Kenny Washington an American Icon? The forgotten story of the man who broke the NFL's color barrier before Jackie Robinson got to Major League Baseball. It was published on Slate. A really fantastic read. Joshua, thank you so much for helping put a spotlight on Kenny Washington's story here on Culture Shift today.
Oh my God, I'm honored. Thanks, man.